Welcome to Morgan Lewis Podcast Central. This is a podcast recording from Morgan Lewis's June 9th, 2016, 9th Annual Advanced Topics in Hedge Fund Practices Conference. Morgan Lewis partners Jed Wider and Timothy Levin shared this 14-part in-depth discussion of U.S. and international advanced hedge fund topics focusing on manager and investor perspectives. Part 12, Current Broker-Dealer Issues. Amy Natterson-Kroll will discuss important recent broker-dealer issues. Now, on to the podcast.
I'm Amy Kroll. I'm a member of the broker-dealer regulatory practice at Morgan Lewis. I am here for broker-dealer issues micro session. There are really only three topics that I want to touch on today. The first one has two parts to it, however. The first issue is the question of when might a fund manager or the personnel for a fund manager find themselves raising issues of whether they're engaged in broker-dealer activities. We call it the broker status question. And this is an area that was basically subsumed into what everybody thought of as the issuer's exemption until about 3 years ago. And it actually is an issue that's been around for quite a long time, but it was an issue that people sort of skirted around. And about 3 years ago, as you heard, if you've attended this conference historically, if you've been to literally any other conference where this issue comes up, there was a speech given by the then chief counsel of the Division of Trading and Markets at the SEC who raised the point that certain marketing activities by fund managers and their personnel and potentially certain transactional activities, in particular by managers of private equity funds, could give rise to broker-dealer issues. And that meant that suddenly we as broker-dealer lawyers were no longer on the outskirts with regard to fund counseling. In fact, we found ourselves front and center. The two touch points that were raised in this speech and that remain touch points were raising funds for private funds, in other words, going out and bringing in new investors, or additional funds from existing investors, and also the payment of fees for private equity transactions. So the second issue, we're going to talk about in a little bit more detail in a moment, because as you may have noticed, the SEC on June 1st actually settled a case with a private equity manager. And the case, although there were Advisors Act anti-fraud violations that were part of the settlement, the SEC chose to highlight that the manager was engaged in unregistered broker-dealer activity. I'll get to that in a moment, but I do want to point out that this is going to be a touch point that's probably going to cause you're going to see a lot of discussion of this now that I've highlighted, if you haven't been paying attention to that already. So 3 years ago, there was a speech, raised the issue, tremendous amount of discussion after that, discussion in the industry, discussion amongst lawyers, discussion amongst compliance counsel, and discussion with the SEC staff, both on the private fund, hedge fund, trading fund side, and the private equity side. There was some thought that there might be some relief given, but that's really come to naught. So we still have this issue without any express relief, either for the marketing of funds or PE managers engaging in transactions on behalf of portfolio companies. What we found was that this was part of the exam modules that managers were encountering. All of a sudden, newly registered managers having their first exams, SEC staff is asking, tell us about your compensation structure, tell us about how you you market your funds, and then raising the question of whether those activities were giving rise to broker status. So, as I mentioned, fast forward, June 1st, there's a case. Case involves a PE manager. The case is called Black Street Capital Management, June 1st, on the SEC's website, if you want to actually read it. It's a fraud case, but what the SEC highlights is the unregistered broker-dealer status. So what did this manager do to cause the SEC to allege that the manager was acting as an unregistered broker-dealer? The settlement, the AP says, that the manager received transaction-based compensation for providing services related to acquisition and disposition of portfolio companies. What the case does not do is talk about whether there was any offset of the fees or some other way of causing the fees to be remitted back to the fund so that it didn't enrich the manager beyond the management fees. There was disclosure. The manager's ADV and the PPMs for the funds made it very clear to investors that the manager would be receiving transaction-based compensation for providing services in transactions involving portfolio companies. That did not cure the problem. This was not a disclosure issue. This was the mere fact of the coupling of providing the transaction services, which is considered a broker activity by the SEC, and being paid for that in the form of transaction-based compensation above and beyond the management fees. Again, the case doesn't mention if there was an offset or some other way of bringing the management fees back to the level of just management fees. But we've done a fair amount of sleuthing around. There's a lot of conversation going on amongst those of us in what we call ourselves the broker-dealer bar. And the consensus is that if there had been an offset, a substantial offset, probably 80% or more, it might well be that would be no case today. But the case is there, and what we all understand from conversations with former SEC staffers and others is that there are more cases to come in this area. So, is there a takeaway? If you're a PE fund, you should be looking at whether you get any extra compensation, transaction-based compensation, and if you do, how you deal with that compensation. We're happy to chat with you. But the bottom line is, be attentive to this. But if you're not a PE fund, does this matter to you? And the answer, we think, is yes. Unfortunately, yes. Why? Because the two broker status questions impacting funds were raised together, and what we think is that this means that there can be increased or renewed attention on the marketing question as well. Who is marketing? How are they marketing? And how are they being paid for their marketing the fund to investors, prospective and obviously existing investors as well? So what some funds have done to remediate on the marketing issue is they've engaged broker-dealers or they've set up broker-dealers to handle their marketing. Then the issue should go away. The manager's not marketing. But a lot of funds and advisors are continuing to handle marketing from internally. And the question is, what steps can be taken to try and, at a minimum, minimize the risk or eliminate the risk of potential broker status? There is the guidance that's been out there in different forms, letters, some rules, none of which are directly on point, but from that we take away really four places to pay attention. A marketer should not be engaged exclusively in marketing. They should be performing substantially other duties beyond marketing and fundraising. They should not be paid based on the funds they bring in. In other words, no transaction-based compensation. You see where that link is to the SEC's case last week? It's all about, are they receiving transaction-based compensation or not? They should not be associated with a registered broker-dealer. And they should not be statutorily disqualified, which basically means they should not be the subject of an action that has been brought by the SEC, by a criminal authority, that basically says you are not eligible to be associated with a broker-dealer unless you take some steps to ameliorate that disqualification. On the PE side, as I mentioned, pay close attention to the fees. Look and institute offsets if you don't have offsets already in place of most or all of deal fees against management fees. And note, even if you disclose, that's not going to cure the broker-dealer status issue. Second point I wanted to raise today. Registered investment advisors currently are not the subject of the FinCEN rules with regard to AML, Know Your Customer. But everyone knows, rules have finally been proposed by FinCEN, and those rules will go into effect. But in the meantime, on May 5th, FinCEN actually announced new provisions as part of their overall set of rules, requiring the look-through of certain legal entities to certain beneficial owners. Two categories of loaners that have to be looked through to. If you have a legal entity with a beneficial owner of more than 25%, or you have a person who is a control person. Obviously, right now, this doesn't apply to a registered investment advisor. However, not only do we think that FinCEN is likely to expand these rules to a registered investment advisor once there is a more robust set of rules that are directly applicable, but if currently your registered investment advisor has implemented an AML program that is substantially compliant with what would be required if you were required to have a program, in other words, so that you can take advantage of the various reliance, you know, the ability to rely on other financial institutions, they can rely on your AML, then your program needs to be enhanced to comply with this new enhanced compliance so that banks, broker-dealers can rely on you going forward. If you don't have this as part of your AML program, then reliance is not going to be possible because your programs will no longer be substantially compliant as if you were subject to the rules. The last thing that this new set of rules will require, and this is brand new, is the institution of risk-based procedures. Risk-based procedures to conduct ongoing customer due diligence. In other words, it won't be enough to do due diligence at intake. There's got to be some degree of ongoing customer due diligence to allow for understanding the nature and purpose of relationships in order to develop risk profiles. Because if you develop a risk profile, you're going to have a better sense of whether you have to file a SAR. The last thing I'd like to mention is the FINRA research rules. Now, why am I mentioning this to you? You're not registered broker-dealers. FINRA doesn't apply to you. I'm actually going to put out a request to you. The sell side is subject to new rules, in particular with regard to debt research. There is a carve-out from the debt research rules for institutional debt research, but it's going to require either negative consent from QIBS or affirmative consent. They're going to need affirmative consent from institutional investors that are between $50 million and $100 million, so until they meet the QIB, in order for the sell side to continue to send to you, the regulators call it debt research, it's sales commentary, desk analysis, the materials that you all look for that you receive from your sales folks, that you get from traders, and that you get from desk analysts. Please, please, especially if you're in that affirmative consent window, $50 million to $100 million, return those requests for affirmative consent so that there is no interference in the flow of information that you receive from all of your firms. All FINRA firms are going to be subject to this. Effective July 16th is when this rule takes effect, unless there's a delay in the effective date. And I can tell you, I'm spending a lot of time meeting with sales desks, with the salespeople, with the traders, and with the desk analysts, talking about what parameters they'll need to comply with, but this will be something that will help them so that they can continue to provide information to you. Thank you all so much.
To listen to other panels from the 2016 9th Annual Advanced Topics in Hedge Fund Practices Conference, visit our Hedge Fund University at morganlewis.com/hedgefunduniversity. If you have any questions or would like more information on the topics addressed in this podcast, please contact a Morgan Lewis attorney at morganlewis.com. This podcast is provided as a general informational service to clients and friends of Morgan Lewis & Bockius LLP. It should not be construed as and does not constitute legal advice on any specific matter, nor does this message create an attorney-client relationship. These materials may be considered attorney advertising in some states. Please note that any prior results discussed in the material do not guarantee similar outcomes. Read more about Morgan Lewis and its hedge funds practice at morganlewis.com/hedgefunduniversity.